This talk was recorded at Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society in Los Angeles and is freely offered for your enjoyment. For more information, please visit againstthestream.org.
So this factor, the sixth factor on the path, mostly translated as effort, sometimes as energy. What kind of effort does it take? Buddhism is a path. The way that the Buddha originally taught this is a path of self-reliance, of the individual has to do all of the work for her or himself, all of the effort to transform, to have well-being and liberation has to come from oneself. Many traditions, many philosophies, many religions talk about a sort of external source of grace, of blessing, of I guess grace and blessing. Transformation from the outside. The Buddha was quite clear that this path, the way that he practiced it, was a transformation from the inside based on one's own practices, one's own actions, one's own effort. He spoke about effort in many different ways, many different times throughout of his teaching. One of the first things that comes to mind is just after enlightenment, before he even taught the Eightfold Path, and he was still just reflecting on how did I get to this state of peace, this experience of equanimity and ease and well-being, what we refer to as liberation, nirvana. And he said there were five factors that led me to this freedom. And this was right around the time when he refers to the freedom that he experienced, the path that he had trudged himself as going against the stream, against greed, against hatred, against delusion. He said, first, I had confidence that it was possible. I had faith. He said, it's actually a prerequisite for all of us. You have to have some level of confidence, some level of belief. You have to be inspired to even try spiritual practice, to even start your path. Someone, something has to inspire you. And so for many of us, we read a book, it inspires us, we meet a teacher, we have a spontaneous internal experience that inspires us, that it gives us some confidence. A lot of people have sort of drug-induced, you have that right mushroom trip. You see for the first time in your life that your mind is not your mind. Something gives us confidence. He said, and from that faith or confidence, whatever inspires us, then effort. And that faith, without doing the work, will get you nowhere. But if you have some faith, if you have some confidence, if you're inspired, and you follow it up with effort, with taking the actions, with doing the meditation, then you will have transformation. So anyways, this is the first time in the teachings that he mentions effort. Faith has to be followed up with effort. And then mindfulness and concentration will lead to wisdom, is what's the rest of that list of the five factors. Mindfulness, concentration, lead to wisdom. So he begins the path with effort, with talking about the necessity of effort, of our own commitment. And then one of the other things that comes to mind is that the last thing that the Buddha ever said. On his deathbed, he is quoted as having said something like, "Trudge forward, strive endlessly for your own liberation. Do not seek an external refuge, but be a guide and a light unto yourself." I think that, you know, to bookend 45 years of teaching, he begins with, do the work, and he ends with, do the work. And he actually has to end with, do the work, do the practice, put your effort in, put in your time. Because on his deathbed, his followers, many of whom are supposedly enlightened, have become so devoted to him and this human tendency to externalize spiritual power and to project it on the teacher, rather than take full responsibility for our own liberation, our own divinity, whatever you want to call it. We have this human tendency to look outside of ourselves for love, for happiness, and for spiritual guidance. And so on his deathbed, his followers are saying, okay, you're dying. Who's in charge now? Who's, you know, who should we look to now? And it's why he has to leave his this last words to say, don't look outside of yourself. You know the Dharma now. You know the teachings. You know how to practice mindfulness. Be a guide to yourself. Seek no external refuge. Strive forward diligently to liberation. What becomes clear once you've been practicing for a while is that this practice takes an ongoing, steady effort. And it takes a balanced effort. Our community, and I think all Buddhist communities, have a really high transience. Every Monday night, there's 20 new people in the room. If everybody that came stayed, we would need a stadium. Part of the effort is a steady effort. I think sometimes people come so often, people might say to you, oh, I can't meditate. I tried that once. I totally can't stop my mind. But what's being asked for is this long-term commitment. And I like the analogy of the stream, and that we are sort of entering a stream where right from the start, you're either going to go downstream or you're going to go against. Without any effort, if you just chill in life, if you just do whatever your mind tells you to do, you just live a life based on craving and aversion and self-centered fear, you will slowly, slowly go farther and farther out to sea. The sea of samsara, the sea of confusion, of suffering, of unhappiness. But that when we start a path, a spiritual path, Buddhist path in this case, we're committing to go against. I know for myself in the early days, and I think that this is common, we get in there and we get so excited, we read the books and we just really try to start going. I'm going to fucking end suffering, God damn it. And we can really burn out quickly because I'm striving so hard to go against, and then I just am exhausted and falling backwards again. To use this analogy of the effort to go swim against a current, many of you probably know that actually what you need to do is, instead of getting in the center of the stream and the river and kind of going ready, is to go kind of slowly back and forth from side to side. You'll make more progress if you diagonally swim this way and then swim that way and kind of take your time and pace yourself and not spend all of your effort right in the beginning. Some would say that this path is more like a marathon. It's a really long, long journey. It's like a trek. It's not a sprint. It's not a short 1K, or I don't know what the running analogy is. When asked about how much effort we should apply to our spiritual practice, the Buddha says, and this includes how we meditate and how we deal with our minds in meditation, and also how we deal with renunciation and our speech, and the actions that we take, right action, right speech, right livelihood, all of the moral and ethical guidelines of our practice. And the Buddha says, your practice and tuning your practice, that each one of us has to do it for ourselves. We have to find our right balanced effort. Remember that Buddhism is referred to over and over as the middle path. A path of balance, not an extreme on either side. And he says, imagine that you, your practice, the effort that you need to put forward in your practice is like a stringed instrument, like a guitar. The instrument that he's talking about is called a lute, and it's a stringed instrument. I don't know how many strings. And he said, it's just like that. If you want to make music on a lute, you have to find the right amount, it has to be tuned correctly. And if it's too tight, if there's too much effort, if it's you'll break a string or it'll sound really twangy or awful, and then you know, oh, too tight, I have to loosen it up a little bit. I got to relax a little bit. I got to chill out. But then if it's too loose also, you know from your own direct experience, not enough effort. This also doesn't feel right, doesn't sound right. Not too tight, not too loose. And this is very important practical advice for us. For you to be constantly looking at your own practice. Looking at your own discipline. Your own renunciation. Looking at the areas of your life, where are you a little too tight? Do you know it when you're getting uptight? When you're getting stressed out? In particular about your meditation practice. When you're turning your practice into a form of suffering. Using the Dharma to judge yourself. To compare yourself to others, when you're being impatient about your progress. I should be there by now. I've been practicing for 3 weeks. This shit doesn't work. Too tight. We can get too uptight about rigorous honesty. I'm going to tell everybody exactly what I think. I'm going to be honest from now on. Maybe you find yourself being a little too tight about that. Maybe forgetting that right speech is not only honesty, it's not, it also includes, is it the right time? Is it the appropriate time? Is it kind? Sometimes we can get a little too tight with our right speech. Where are the places in your own practice where you're a little too loose? Where there's not quite enough effort? Where you're kind of casual about, like, oh, I'll meditate on Monday. Not actually putting the effort in and kind of wondering, why isn't this working? Or maybe you're meditating quite a bit, but you're still in a dishonest relationship with your partner. Not being honest when it is totally appropriate and called for. And wondering, why I'm meditating a lot, I'm meditating every day. Why am I still so much fear? And then looking, am I being too loose around some of my ethical behaviors? Am I still stealing? Am I still lying? Am I being unskillful with my sexual energy, causing suffering in that way? Too loose. Or, you get it, right? Not too tight, not too loose. Each of us diagnosing and tuning our own life's practice. Again, back to those ending words of the Buddha, be a refuge unto yourself. Take full responsibility for your liberation. Check in, be diligent. Once you learn the path, and it's pretty simple. It doesn't take that long to learn the Buddhist path. It's all lined out for us. And then really looking, am I applying the right amount of effort? And sometimes the answer is yes, I feel pretty balanced. And then it's just, I'm on this long journey. I like to quote the Dalai Lama when he was asked, well, how long is this going to take? You know, kind of how much effort, how long? What's a quick, fast, cheap, easy way to get enlightened? And he said, you know, just commit. This is a life's practice that you're embarking on. And check in on your progress every decade or so. Really put that kind of steady, long-term effort into mindfulness. Be present. Live in your body more often. Be kind. Practice forgiveness. Practice compassion. And do it steadily and see in a decade if you're suffering less, if you've become more kind, if you've become more compassionate. Long-term, steady effort. In the suttas, one of the ways that the Buddha talks about effort is the four great efforts. The first I mentioned a little bit earlier, the effort to avoid the the way it's translated here, avoid the arising of evil. Sounds kind of cool. So, evil, we can translate it greed, hatred, and delusion. It's not the devil, it's not some cool, gory horror film evil. It's just referring to what causes suffering in our lives. And what can we do to avoid the causes of suffering? Greed arising. Attachment, clinging, arising, craving, arising. hatred, aversion, resistance. What can we do to avoid the arising? And the effort to overcome once greed, hatred, delusion in one of its forms has arisen. Now what? What is the effort to overcome? How do we deal with this suffering when you're just lost in lust, when you're just lost in hatred, when you're completely deluded and you're really self-centered and you're just believing the story in your mind? It has arisen. How do we overcome it? It takes effort. And the effort to develop wisdom, the effort to develop compassion. And when wisdom and compassion have been developed, the effort to maintain, to continue to sustain living in a wise way, in a compassionate way. So the first piece, the effort to avoid, partially what the Buddha is talking about is, and you all know, what are the areas of your life that you know are just kind of triggers for suffering? Part of the way he talks about it in this way, he's talking to celibate monks and nuns. So he's saying, you know, if lust and sexual craving is a source of suffering for you, really be very restrained about how you let your eye fall upon other people's bodies. If you're practicing celibacy, don't look at her ass. You don't need to suffer that way. Be restrained on how, because you know what's going to arise when you get a glimpse of the rumpus. And so avoid looking at that which is going to bring on lust for you. And so for a celibate monastic, that, you know, sexual stuff, of course. But what is it for you? And you have to be honest. Maybe it's Facebook. Maybe it's the news. How many people just suffer this? They watch the news over and over, compulsively suffering. I know this is going to piss me off. I know this is going to frustrate me, but I got to be informed. What are the areas in your life, you know, for the addict, the drug of choice, the behavior of choice, the places that bring on the cravings? For, you know, anyways, just looking at your place, what are the places to have some renunciation about, the activities to have some renunciation, some avoidance of? And that I also see this partially as a practice of really what's arising in our minds, but also as a phase of practice. That in the beginning of your spiritual practice, you might need to be a bit more constrained of where you go, what you do. In long-term practice, I actually believe that you will be able to, that we will be able to go anywhere and do anything once our relationship has changed. Like that thing about the celibate and looking at objectifying somebody's body. At some point in practice, you're going to be able to look at the butt and not suffer about it, and just see a butt. And maybe even the arising of desire will come, and there will be no suffering about that arising. It'll just arise and it will pass. Does this make sense? Until you're there, sometimes it's good to avoid that. When you're still suffering about it, avoid it. The second piece around, oh wait, here's an interesting, oh, the second piece, the effort to overcome. So suffering is here. And this is very important because we can't always avoid. Suffering is going to be here. And part of our practice, a big part of our path, is turning towards. Remember, the first noble truth of acknowledging the suffering, acknowledging the dukkha and all of the difficulties that we all have in our life, and the practice is to turn towards it, to embrace it. But when that dukkha is present, when that suffering is present, the Buddha says, in order to overcome it, there is several practices. One thing you can do is, like, say you're really stuck in hatred. You're really stuck in a judgment or a resentment or some kind of, you know, anger or hatred. He says, the first thing that you can try in order to overcome it is to replace it. Replace this object, this unwholesome thought, this suffering in your mind. Try to replace it with another object. He says, if that doesn't work, like, so you're in hatred and you try to start doing loving kindness. Replace your thoughts, your unkind thoughts, with kind thoughts. Start saying, I forgive you. May you be at ease. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. Trying to replace it. If that doesn't work, he says, you can reflect on the misery of these thoughts. You can think about, wow, I'm just really in this resentment, or I'm just really in this lust, or I'm in this delusion that I'm in this thought that I can't be happy until, right? And you can fill in the blank. That delusional, greedy thought that says, I can't be happy until. He says, when you get stuck in that, reflect on what misery that kind of delusional thinking creates, that craving. Sometimes that will help. The quote is, unwholesome truly are these thoughts, blamable are these thoughts, of painful results are these thoughts. So just sort of turning on what your mind is doing and acknowledging that this is not skillful thoughts. Said if that doesn't work, pay no attention to these thoughts. And so sometimes in meditation we're doing that when we're coming back to our breath over and over and ignoring the thinking mind. Pay no attention to what your mind is doing. Just learn to ignore it. Or consider the compound nature of the thoughts. And this is like how thoughts, the Buddha talks about the proliferation, the compound nature of thoughts. You'll see it in your meditation where you're sitting here and you hear a sound, a car go by. And then that brings on the thought, car or bus or whatever, and then maybe you think about what a drag it was when you had to ride the bus when you were a kid. And all of a sudden you're being teased on the school bus. You're remembering what it was like to be on the school bus when you were a kid. And you're feeling angry at the bully. Or maybe you remember, actually I was the bully on the school bus. And you're feeling guilty. I should make amends to all those poor kids I used to throw spit wads at. And just reflecting on the compound nature. All of a sudden I'm in guilt, I'm in shame, or I'm in anger, I'm in rage. And the compound nature of that thought was that I heard a bus go by. And it led to thinking about buses, and it led to remembering an experience that happened 35 years ago. And now this emotion has arisen. And the compound nature of thoughts. This last effort, I think, is a little controversial because there's such a gentleness usually encouraged in meditation and in Buddhism. But the Buddha says if a evil evil, unwholesome suffering has arisen in your mind, and you can't replace it, and you can't ignore it, and the compound nature of it's nothing is working. He says, last ditch effort, with teeth clenched and tongue pressed against the gums, you should, with your mind, restrain, suppress, and root out these thoughts. And in doing so, these evil, unwholesome thoughts of greed, hatred, and delusion will dissolve and disappear. The mind will become inwardly steady and calm, composed and concentrated. He says, just as a strong person would take a weaker person and throw them to the ground, you should throw these thoughts out of your mind. I don't know how many have you seen that Adam Sanborn, what's his name? Threw it on the ground. You seen that? It's this hilarious YouTube of this guy singing this song about throwing it on the ground. And I always think about that when I hear this, like, oh, you're resentful? Just throw it on the ground. I think that this is a little bit of dangerous advice for us, because especially if you have any history or tendency towards suppression, towards not allowing yourself to feel, we don't want to give permission for suppression. I hear this of a kind of last ditch. If you're so angry that you're about to hurt somebody, if you're so lustful that you're about to hurt somebody or hurt yourself, then clench your teeth and push that thought of violence or out of your mind. Do whatever you need to do to restrain yourself if it's going to get to the point where you're hurting yourself or someone else. The effort to develop and the effort to maintain, so much of what we're doing here, of what we're practicing here, developing mindfulness and concentration in order to have insight into the impermanent and impersonal, unsatisfactory nature of all things. In order to develop wisdom and compassion, we practice sitting meditation, we practice right speech, right livelihood, renunciation of drugs and alcohol and sexual misconduct and dishonesty. The path is a long-term development that takes effort. And when wisdom has arisen, or compassion has arisen, or this experience of sukha that I was referring to earlier, some spiritual bliss or happiness or well-being, if something, if you're really in something, some goodness, the Buddha talks about maintaining it. And we can get so into non-attachment that we can be a little bit afraid of our own spiritual experiences. There's so much warning about, like, don't get attached to them, that we can sometimes not even allow ourselves to enjoy or appreciate that which has arisen, the wholesome, when you're spontaneously feeling generous. Enjoy it. Maintain that feeling of generosity when you're practicing kindness, when you're having a experience of forgiveness. Maintain it. It's impermanent, right? You can't hold on to it forever. But the key feels like non-attached appreciation of what has arisen. This is here now. Enjoy it. It'll pass. You don't have to be afraid of your experiences. Let them sustain and maintain for as long as they will and let them pass as they do. Some of my thoughts, some of the Buddha's teachings about the sixth factor of the Eightfold Path, wise, appropriate effort, strive diligently for your own liberation, not too tight, not too loose, and only check in on your progress once every decade or so. That's all the time we have for tonight.
You have just listened to a podcast from Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society. If you'd like to make a contribution to help support these teachings, please visit againstthestream.org.